Welcome to the Purity Podcast, where we dig deep into the journey to sexual purity. We share our experience, strength, and hope using tools and resources to help you find sexual healing. We also share stories and strategies of people making an extraordinary impact. The Purity Podcast is brought to you by Castamonia, a Christ-centered 12-step program for men fighting for sexual purity. To learn more about Castamonia, go to castamonia.org. That's CASTIMONIA.org. Hey, today I'm honored to be with Brian Schillingberg. Brian is the founder of Ninth Inning Project, where he walks with men struggling with pornography and compulsive sexual behaviors through honest conversation, courageous accountability, and the transforming power of Jesus Christ. Brian is a certified sexual addiction recovery coach with a master's in education. Brian has a powerful story of healing and redemption. Brian was a former leader in the public school system who found himself in a place he never thought possible. Okay, Brian, welcome to the Purity Podcast, man. I'm so glad that you agreed to be interviewed. Not everybody knows that we just recently met through Mark Dennison. He's just bringing some people together that are kind of like-minded in the area of really wanting to help men and even women and couples in recovery, whether it's betrayal trauma or just helping men fight for sexual purity and from, you know, addiction and so forth. So one conversation we had, knew that I had to have you on the podcast because your story is so strong.
Yeah, man.
And you talk about one of my favorite phrases in the 12-step program in Castamonia's Christ-centered 12-step program is we share our experience, strength, and hope with each other. And that's to help us become the sexually pure men God intends us to be. And so let's just start there with, you know, your experience. Like let's talk about Brian and how you came to the place where you are today. And you could go as far back as you want and share as much detail or as little detail as you care to. But sure. I'm just grateful for you being here.
Man, dude, no, I just appreciate you. Thanks for the opportunity. Man, big shout out to Mark Dennison for connecting us. And yeah, man, so excited about what you're doing. And you and your wife are an inspiration to me. And it's an honor to be in this space. Thanks, man. My name's Brian Schillingberg. Grateful in recovery. In Regen, we say we have a new life in Christ, and that's what I have, recovering from sexual brokenness, from depression, from shame. You know, found a lot of healing and a lot of peace in that space. But my story, you know, it starts off, man, I mean, we can go deep, you know. Just as a kid, I kind of grew up in an all-American home, you know. I had an incredible family. You know, my parents were married really young, West Texas oil out in Kermit, Texas. You know, my dad was in the military, my mom was a homemaker, you know, incredible family. But you know, and in that space though, there were some challenges, you know. Military household is hard, and often felt like I didn't meet those expectations, you know, from my dad. You know, my mom had three miscarriages before she had me. And so like when I came, I was like a prize, man. It was like, you know, I was a gift. And so my brother's 10 years older than me. Just talk about like all American, awesome, you know, graduated magna cum laude, A&M. Like he was just this 10 years older than me. Just this like rock star, good at everything. Everything he touched, he was just, you know, incredible. And so, but, you know, early on, I kind of cemented in that space. Just there was a lot of pain in our home at that moment with my mom and dad going through their own struggles, you know, and then had some real painful experiences that shaped my life. One of them being a sexual assault that happened to me in middle school, which now looking back in my story, that really shaped a lot of the man that I became today. And used also from a real experience of my mom being kind of overly doting and my dad real strong, heavy-handed, you know, I used other things to cope, and food was one of them. Food was a big thing for me. I would overeat, and then as soon as some of those painful experiences happened to me, food and masturbation kind of became this backwards thing where I would use in a cycle to cope, and that followed me all the way through my adult years. But man, I came to know Christ early. I grew up in a Christian household, but something I really struggle with is that I was saved, but I could not understand forgiveness for myself. I struggle with understanding that because, and that shame cycle cemented in me so deeply at an early age that it was so forming in who I was as a person. It developed my identity, and like that identity in Christ piece was a real piece and a problem for me. I often failed. I would want to eat better. I would want to stop looking at the things I was looking at, but and that Romans 7, man, that's where it's at, dude. Like, this is that part where I have the desire to do what is right, but I don't have the ability, man. I need a power greater than myself. And I didn't know that. I didn't see that.
Did any of that, sorry to interrupt, but did any of that shame, like some of the shame and even some of the eating, were those as not maybe as a result of, but it was it a part of the sexual assault that you experienced? Was that sexual assault, was it from a fellow student? Was it an adult? Was it like, if you don't, you don't want to mention it, that's fine, but what did
I think it's a combination. It was a combination of the my household, and the chaos that was going on between my mom and dad at the time. It was living in the military and moving a lot, which was, moving a ton was not easy and hard. That definitely shaped a moment for me, and just as another friend and peer that I was, hanging out with for a week at his house, took a lot of my authority. It took away from me. It's something that happened to me that I didn't ask for. And it felt like, it just piled on this, already a heavy pile of shame that I was already walking with, in the lies that that I was telling myself as a person.
All right, so yeah, so you're back to that Romans 7, sorry, so maybe pick up there. We love that. Yeah, love that passage, and painful passage for me as well for a long time. I just seem to do the things I don't want to do, and the things I want to do, I don't do.
Yeah, man. I think that cycle, that failure for me as I get into my teen years, man, got married to my college sweetheart. We had an incredible kid. I was in education, kindergarten, fourth grade teacher. I felt like my career had really been set, but food and porn really continued. I got to a point in my young 30s where I was over 400 pounds. I was absolutely at a place where I was about to die in my 50s if I didn't do something. Doctor came into my life and he said, "Hey, this is what your timeline's gonna look like. You're gonna have to do something about it." And so I got serious about it. I lost in early 2014, 2015, about 200, over 200 pounds. And in that journey, man, I found like I was like the new guy. I was new and fresh, and but now, as I've learned, comorbidities are a real deal. AA talks about this thing called you got a touch of the isms, and that was a little bit of what happened with me, man. I found alcohol to be a real easy appetite suppressant, but it also kind of made me calm. And then, man, I'm talking like from in 2 years, I was a heavy drinker, 3 years full blown alcoholism. Like, it took over my life. So it's like I replaced food with alcohol, and it took me quick. And so at that time, in those 3 short years, man, I found myself, having affairs, acting out, just on a tear, on a tear with my wife. Thankfully found a DWI in that process, and it scared me to death. It got me out into the halls of AA, and there, I started a lot of beautiful recovery, and that's where I kind of figured out that I couldn't live in a silo anymore. I had to reach out and communicate and get this thing solved,
When you were dealing with the alcohol and kind of finding yourself as maybe an alcoholic, maybe if you'd label it that, did you ever put the pieces together that maybe you were a sex addict as well? Or because one of the things that I talk about to guys some is like, having a sexual addiction is something we tend to hide, whereas being an alcoholic is something we can kind of talk about. It's like AA seems to be
It's
something we
way more
can,
widely accepted
we can talk
than you
about. Hey,
saying
I've
you're
got
a
to go to
sex
an AA
addict.
meeting. They're like, oh, way to go, man. I'm proud of you.
Yeah,
When you talk
yeah.
about
You got your
sexual
chip.
addiction, they're like, oh,
Yeah,
all right, well, I
yeah.
gotta go.
Yeah, I did, so there was a touch of that. I got connected with Jonathan Doherty at Be Broken Ministries. He's actually a brother. I grew up our families knowing each other, and I had talked to him about the affair, and he had told me about what I should do, and I got plugged in for a year with some accountability. And but even in that moment, in that year of spending that time, I just thought, oh, it's just pornography. Like it's not that big of a deal. I acted out, and that's not a big deal. But in a year, that group kind of fell apart, and then so thereby did my willingness to stay accountable. And I went right back to the old things that I knew since that I had cemented as a kid. It was an easy move for me. But I think the bigger part of that is just a lot of lies that I was telling myself, that I deserved more out of my marriage, that my wife had made at the time had made commitments that I felt like, I deserved, that she should have stuck to. And so I just, man, started not only keeping those things of my childhood going, but also just believing these lies, unable to die, just diving deeper into my ego. And so, but alcohol, like, in the rooms of AA, and shout out to Katie 12 and 12 for those people out there, man. It's a rambunctious group of guys and men and women that are excited about healing and getting accountable. I saw that, but I still, it's like all I could say is like keeping that pornography thing was like in a box, keeping it in a shelf, not high,
Just
thinking
compartmentalizing it.
excuses. Yeah, just saying, oh well, it's things guys do, it's a process. But this is the thing, man. Now I've learned, and adults don't see this, is that pornography in that constant use, like from an early age, it creates double-mindedness. Like James 4:8 talks about this, man. Like James was talking to the early church about the problems that they were having, and he was like, those who have their minds set in other ways, it's only one pathway. And that's where I was. I had such a desire to want to know Jesus, but that peace that I continually used would keep me from really seeing that maturity. Really, what I call it is like maturity, spiritual maturity. Like really knowing the depth and the beauty of being able to walk in as a believer,
I want to hit on that James
Yeah.
4 passage real quick,
Yeah.
because oftentimes I like to read passages backwards a little bit to walk myself back into it, like how do I
Yeah.
get there? And
Yeah.
just forwards, what it says is, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, purify your hearts, you double-minded. And I think if I look at that kind of backwards, I have to recognize that there is this double-mindedness about me, right? And then I have to look and see, I need my heart purified because I am a sinner, and I need my hands cleaned. And what it's saying there is, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. And those things will take place as a result of that, right? You will find your hands cleansed. You'll be purified. Your heart will be purified. And I just think that's really powerful when we talk about that double-mindedness, that there are steps we can take that were pointed to God through different experiences and so forth. So super cool. But anyway, carry on.
Man, pandemic hit. I had found myself still then as a school leader of a middle school, was trying to survive in that middle school environment. And I don't know if any public educator can communicate how hard the pandemic was for everyone in that space. Running a middle school of 1,300 kids in a pandemic online was like, it was insane. It was insane. So, but path to sobriety found my way, and then I met the love of my life. I met this incredible woman, man, a treasure. Just, we bonded over baseball, and the only thing we could do was go to like these baseball games out here in Constellation Field. And her and I, we just in real quick in a year, man, we new jobs, new blended family. I got a promotion out in over here in the Sugar Land area as a high school of an incredible academically just unbelievable place. It was like a dream. It was like a dream. The new I got the dog, I got the new house. Everything was just coming true in my life,
And your first marriage, I'm sorry, I think we missed this, but did your first marriage, I remember when we talked previously, ended as a result of kind of the drinking and some of that, right? Okay.
I think my alcoholism ended right then and there as to where I was in another affair. I was burning up everything. I was at death's doorstep, man. I'm talking like, throwing up blood, like drinking to the point of just absolute insanity of like drinking, passing out, drinking, passing out, and then getting up and going to work and leading a school, which is just absolutely crazy.
As far as your first wife is concerned, did she know about your affairs, or did she know about any of that, or was it just the alcoholism that kind of led you down that path of divorce?
As much as I could say, I know that she knew something was up. And but then when I did reveal that to her, that was enough. That was enough for her. She had had enough. And I understandably and biblically sound, she had had enough of what I had put her through, enough to end almost 20 years together, which was really scary. It was my life was ending, my marriage was ending. Our world was ending, and so but anyways, yeah, that DWI was a big gift now that I look back, and it saved my life. I was able to get to a place of accountability and walking through the first steps again and a sponsor. And so then, yeah, we talk about the gifts that come out of that, and I still did not have a grasp on that thing that I continually pulled off that shelf day in and day out with pornography, and it really pulled out of my life into a place where, I was dealing with a lot of stress. I had known about massages in Houston. I had known about trafficking. I was aware of all of that stuff. I was very weary of it, honestly. I mean, I had even learned and gone to anti-trafficking stuff through the district, and I knew to be careful about that stuff. But I would go to massages and get those purely in a stress relieving environment, which I thought was healthy. But then, man, I got propositioned once in that space, and that's all it took. That it was like all I can tell you. It was like a claw. It was like a claw on my back of something that happened to me. And so that got me bought into going to massage parlors for 7 times, man. I went and pulled this stuff, and just like an addiction does, man, it just builds. You just expect more, you want more, you are never satiated. Your ego starts to become such bigger outside of yourself. And man, I went to a prostitute, and then right after that, I mean, it was quick. I was at a big function for my school. I was riding high, spoke to 2,000 people, scheduled a meeting to meet with another person, and then I was busted. I got arrested in a prostitution sting that happened here.
So you just finished speaking to 2,000 people, and you said you get busted. But like, what's the like timing? You leave this group of 2,000 people, and then you get where what happened after that?
Yeah, it's wild. It was about less than 20 minutes.
Okay.
Less than 20 minutes. I looked something up online. I texted that person. I went to that hotel. I parked. And here's the thing, man. Like, the Holy Spirit's real, man. The conviction that was over me, what I was about to go through, it was I literally I was sitting in my car, and I was getting out, and I got out, and I got back in, and I was like, this is not what I should be doing. I got out again and got back in my car. I was in such inner turmoil. God, and now I look back, it was God. God was saying, Brian, you are making a mistake, man. That third time I got out, and I thought, I'm running out of time. It's either now or never. Just go. And I convinced myself to go. And within that moment, man, I arrested, brought in a van. Man, it was a really painful deal. They put me in a holding cell. I don't remember a ton.
I bet, yeah.
I just saw a lot of panic attack, cold sweats. I think in that moment they thought that I was a major risk of suicide, and they put me in a suicide cell for 10 hours. I just sat in there. I just sat. I sat. They took all your clothes off. They put the smock on you. This like weighted thing. You're freezing. All you can do is like pee in a hole. And no answers, no nothing. It was a really dark. I mean, I was crying out. I was crying out. God help me, desperate, desperate, desperate. Just knowing that there was chaos going on outside, like, and not wanting to come out of that space, but as I got taken into the jail cell, they arraign you, and I'm naked in front of like a bunch of people, and this little smock's trying to cover you. It's wild. It's just so humbling. It's just so humbling. I walked, they give me, my stuff, and I go up to the jail cell, and Mia Grady, Channel 2 News, or I think she was channel, I can't remember what channel she is. Can't watch the news much anymore, but she had come and spoke at my school. Her daughter was one of my students. Like, here she is announcing me, man, dude. And like the whole jail where they put me is watching this and just catcalling and shaking the bars, and like it's like out of a movie, man. It was just absolute chaos that happened that night. I shortly was pulled out right after, and man, my wife came and got me. Like if there shows you any kind of like courage this woman has, man, she pulled me out. And in that, the news guy is coming after me, wanting my statement. News people were outside of our house for like a week. And so it was just this major, like, all I can say is like a nuclear bomb just dropped on our whole family, on the name that I created, the marriage we had, everything. Decimated. Decimated.
So that's the experience, man. I mean, what a powerful experience. I mean, it's have you ever been in those meetings where like I say this to guys all the time. Look, there's nothing you have done that I haven't done myself, thought about doing, or given enough time and resources would have done. Like it's just who that's the path I was on. And yet you hear stories like this. I'm sure you probably like have that such a great connection with other men because of what God has brought you through. Where do you talk about the strength and hope? Like, I mean, I know those probably kind of fall hand in hand, but like talk about that strength and hope and what was the timing of your, that'll make a man sober pretty freaking quick, by the way, right? Like, I mean, sobriety isn't a big problem after you've been arrested, I would guess. Now, that said, I know guys who got arrested, do their court hearing and are back at it. It's like, it can't happen, but nothing like from your story and kind of, the direction you were headed with, your alcoholism and finding sobriety there, that this is probably one of those things that like, yeah, I think I could be sober pretty easy now. Like
Pretty
this is not
easy.
this part's not gonna be too hard. So talk about that recovery and what that looks like. And I'm assuming that sobriety was pretty easy, but talk about that.
So Proverbs 6 talks about like a lying tongue and a false witness, and I had built my name and who I was on servant leadership, and mainly because I wanted to model myself as Christ, right? As what Christ as how he served and his heart for serving. And that's what I stood for. And I think, man, just very clearly, God was like, I cannot stand a lying tongue and a false witness. Where my heart wanted to be that, it was that piece of who I was that he was just not okay with anymore. And man, talking about moving out of your zone of protection, and so man, I sat on a bed. I didn't know what to do. I called Jonathan back at Be Broken. I expected when I called him a response of like, poor guy, but it was like, listen, idiot. Like, and not, I'm not Jonathan not calling me an idiot by any means, but it was serious. It was like, your life is like, you need to understand how serious this is. And he said something, it stuck with me. I've told it to everybody. You've got to get to the root of what is going on here. You've got to get down to the bottom of this thing. And so he, man, I don't know how, but God made a way and timing. I got to go to this thing called Gateway to Freedom. And that's where I was like it all got revealed in terms of my trauma growing up, of what I experienced as a kid, why, how that kind of that crafted who the guy was today. I started, it was crazy. I still have my book. I started writing these themes of recovery. I was like, I need help with this. Like, I need a guy that can help me with this. And these are the themes of my life that needed to be fixed. And so that, I jumped into he's got a 40-day purity challenge that I started in that process. And then, man, it's like, John 5, Jesus, the man pool of Bethesda, he was like, grab your mat, get up. It's time to walk. It's time to start feeling. And I started a journey with my counselor over a period of months, where we started going through those themes. We started doing childhood deep dives. break. And you know, the thing was, is that like I was leading it. I
Yeah.
was saying, I need help. I am desperate. Like I won't live. I went through, you know, this process called a formal disclosure, man. And you want to talk about like one of the most humbling things is to
Yep.
like spend months writing down your broken sexual history.
Yeah.
And my amazing wife went in that therapeutic disclosure. She listened to what I said, all 9 pages of it. And then she called me after and she thanked me. That woman said, "Thank you for your honesty." And it created this baseline for her to decide, okay, am I going to be with this dude or not? Went and got a polygraph. And then, man, I got plugged in real quick after that. I know Castamonia, you know, of really well. I started at Castamonia. Just another God moment where a brother called me up. He said, "Listen, John Wash called me." He said, "Buddy, I met a dude. He wants to meet you. He heard about your story, and I want to give you his contact info." And he put me in touch with Brian. And man, Brian had lunch breakfast with me, and he just told me his story. And he invited me to Grand Parkway Baptist, and they had a men's program called The Stand. And man, I just found a credit incredible community there. And I'm talking like men that like got brutally honest about everything in their lives. And I just got it. I got into the seven pillars, Ted Roberts and the seven pillars. I started putting in, you know, these practices, these, learning about my inner, middle, and outer circles, learning a recovery action plan, all the programmed processes that he teaches in that was just, it was powerful.
Yeah. I
And
think one
man,
of the things you said there, sorry to interrupt again, but like the just finding men who were brutally honest. I said something this a couple weekends ago. I got to speak at a retreat, and one of the things that I feel like a lot of men, they want to be spiritual, so they'll share just enough to feel spiritual about what they've shared, right? But they don't want to be brutally honest because I don't know if I could trust you with that information. I don't know if I would, I feel imprisoned, by it. I feel ashamed of it. I don't want anybody to know the depth of my sin. So, like, that's one of the things that I love about Castamonia. And it sounds like you found that in that program at Grand Parkway Baptist Church. Like, talk about that a little bit, like the men that surrounded you in that period. Like, it was, what was that like to, I mean, were you at a point where you're just like, hey, I've been on the news and I've been publicly kind of shamed. This is easy. I'll just go in here and tell everybody what's up. Or was there like, tell me what that connection was like and how you felt the freedom to like, just, be brutally honest.
Well, men modeled it, right? I think that was the first thing. The second thing, though, like, I mean, when I first started going there, I mean, I served that community. I served that community for over, almost a decade. And so talk about like the fear of just walking in a door. And that first year, man, just even to be recognized, it was painful. I sat on the outskirts for many, many months. I didn't open my mouth. I'll be really honest, brutally honest, that those first several months, like I was close to death. Like I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to live being the guy that I was and now what I was supposed to be, you know. But what's cool is that I just kept going back, you know. I kept some men that I started to really connect with started really getting real brutally honest on weekly calls, check accountability calls with me. And I'd say those two conversations, partnered with that, partnered with counseling, partnered, with all the deep dive work that I was doing into my family of origin and the things that had happened to me, was the catalyst that gave me the willingness to want to like get better, and find it wasn't easy. But the thing that the gift of desperation is a beautiful thing, because you're it's like, if I don't do this, I'm gonna die. It seems to me in my life, the only thing that's led me to any kind of real big change is like a giant sledgehammer on top of
Yeah,
my
it's
head.
the pain of staying the same finally became more painful than changing. Forever, it was the pain of changing was the most painful. So yeah, wow. So what are you up to now? How are you, what are you doing today, and what brought you to Mark Dennison, and how did we connect? Like, tell me about that.
Oh man, I mean, just since then, it's just been like, first just got tied into a company that a brother that just reached out, of someone, a friend through my wife, that this guy just taught me a lot about life, and in his own story, really gave me an opportunity to heal, taught me a whole new business, gave me an opportunity to work from home. Gave me a space to kind of heal and take care of myself and my family. And in that space, just spending a ton of time, podcasts, Pure Radio, Patrick Carnes, William Struthers, I just, Dr. Carol Jurgen Sheets, I started just getting, education is who it's, I'm a lifelong learner. I love to learn. It's just who I am. And so I became a learner of this space. We started fighting for our marriage, man, in a beautiful way. I don't know if you've heard of this book, Dr. Carol Jurgen Sheets, Help Her Heal. It was like one of the most powerful books I've ever gone through, in realizing this absolute, what I thought a marriage was supposed to be and the way that I was supposed to work through this healing journey. Powerful. And I started to learn how to communicate. So the starting of this real honest, how I have to be honest about everything. Like, it was painful. She talks about aggressive communication, passive aggressive communication, which I'm really good at, passive communication, and then assertive communication, which is like none of that, but really telling your story, honest, without all the emotion, and so we just, that started happening, our marriage. We started getting into counseling, and then, man, then it's like I started this thing called Regen at Grand Parkway. I was a little hesitant at first because it was 12 step, and I felt like I knew 12 step, but you hear this AA will save your life, but Jesus is what, it really will save your soul, And man, Jesus started just doing a work in me in this study. And it's not, it's, I give credit to the study. I got to go to a leadership conference at Watermark, and I heard Nate speak, and man, he just all credit to just Christ and his power to just absolutely overtake your life and absolutely consume every part of you. And then just starts this amazing journey of revealing and uncovering this life that you that I want to live now, of walking in hand in hand in with him. So it's getting to know him, getting to be accountable. I got to go through that inventory. I got to, start making some statements and start making amends. And then, I kind of found myself, I told you at the end of this region, we're wrapping up, and it talks about 1 Corinthians 5:17 and 18. We are a new creation, and all of this is from God, who reconciled us to himself and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. So I'm learning what that means. And so Mark is just this incredible guy. I found him through a brother from Be Broken, who has been my accountability partner. He's like, you got to check this dude out. And so I started jumping into some of his meetings, and I started doing his advanced recovery groups. And then Lauren and I actually did a couples group with him and his wife. And so I started just getting to know him and connecting with him. And in my story, I've got a background now, and finding any kind of like a next step in a career is almost impossible, you know. But what has happened now is that I've had experience for many years working with people, setting goals for them, being a leader in a leadership space, leading a almost like a small city, you know, and love the curriculum writing and that piece. And Mark has partnered with me to in January 2026 to start working some of his groups.
Oh, awesome.
And start pulling some one-on-ones for him, doing his 90-day plan. And so I'm already working with another guy to work in coaching. I'm getting SART trained and going through my training, wrapping that up. And so I have just been on this really cool journey, man, of like getting to know you and getting to know other people in the space. And like looking at a future of what work I can do in helping men find recovery and just learning. I'm soaking up, you know, Patrick Carnes and like wanting to know this stuff, facing the shadow. Like this is the guy. And so man, just gotta tell you this quick story. Partnered up with a guy that my wife had put me in touch with. My wife got it plugged into ISA, which is a recovery group for women. It's been like instrumental in our marriage. But her mentor, I got in touch with her husband. And anyways, we just picked a random spot out in the Papacito's out in by NRG, right? And I'm sitting there eating lunch. And I look over, and then I'm like, is that Mark Dennison over there? Like, there's still hope. I was like, I think that's him, but he lives in Florida. Like, why is he here? You know? And anyways, I right after jumped in and texted him. I was like, I think I saw you at Papacito's. Like, what's going on? And anyways, that started this conversation about, hey, what are you doing? You know, man, I've been real interested in wanting to get into recovery work with men. And, he and I just connected. And then I jumped into some of his accountability groups. And then he and I just met with my wife and I. And it's just kind of turned into this really cool relationship where we're going to partner together. And I'm so excited to learn from him and learn from the space and what he's doing.
That's
And
awesome.
how I can help other men find freedom. And so, yeah, this thing of reconciliation has just been popping off, and it's been powerful. Another cool thing that's happened is in my work with the court side, the DA had me do my community service with anti-human trafficking. And he put me in touch with a guy named Joe Madison at Demand Disruption. I was telling you about him. And anyways, Joe and I, man, we've become fast friends, and he has just poured into my life. Just another brother that's shown me just he's got such a passion for helping men like me get in recovery. And he's got a whole process that he uses. He partners with groups like I know he works with Harris County, and he speaks and teaches, and then he's got his own Demand Disruption University, and he is doing some crazy stuff in anti-human trafficking with men, with buyers side, you know. Hear that, you know. He's but he called me on a podcast. I got to speak, share my testimony, and then he called me up one day and he was like, listen, I have this idea. I think we need to get you on a podcast with three former prostitutes, and you be a buyer, a former buyer, and another buyer, and we're just gonna talk about this world. And I was like, you're crazy, man. I'm not doing this. There's no way. He was like, let me talk to your wife. And so, anyways, my wife opened up this opportunity, and She just, man, I don't know. She gave me the green light, and we ended up having dinner together. And I told you, when we were talking that I walked in fearing that I was going to have to posture myself in a way of asking for forgiveness. And like, these women have been so hurt by so many men, I'm sure. But as my wife turned and told her story, like, these women went to her. Like, they went into a posture that I was going into. One incredible lady opened up and told her story. She was holding on to some stuff, man, that she needed to release in terms of the people that she had hurt in her process and her addiction. And so it just, like, my wife became this conduit. And then so we go to this podcast, and she has all of her friends from ISA there, and her husband's there too. And it was the podcast started at this table, and it started right from that conversation of what my wife had done. So I just gotta say, my wife is like this courageous person, Proverbs 31 wife. He is
Amazing.
an amazing human that I don't even know how I get to be in her life still, but she sticks by me. She encourages me. Like, I don't know.
That's
So,
amazing. Well,
yeah.
let's land the plane a little bit here, but what is there anything that you'd leave the listeners with as far as encouragement or challenge or first steps if you were them? Like what anything you'd
Yeah.
you get off the top of your head?
Well, we know statistics, right? Like, we know that one out of every two men who are pastors are dealing with pornography, right? But think about the struggle that men are carrying trying to pasture a flock and struggling in this space, right? Pornography has become so prevalent that we're not able to find freedom. With really knowing who what we're truly meant to made to be. And so I just encourage men to find there is freedom. There is freedom in a life of honesty. There is freedom in finding hope and help. If people think we can pray this thing away, and let me tell you, man, you got to get around some people that know what's going on. And how to solve this stuff. Some of it's so ingrained in our childhood and the trauma of what we've experienced. Most men who deal with this kind of thing have experienced some kind of trauma like that. Yeah, but just to wrap and say, please reach out. My email, Brian at Ninth Inning Project. It's 9th Inning Project. It's a place I kind of think of where we're right at the end. One swing can change the whole trajectory of your life. Take a chance, start making a change for yourself, find freedom from addiction that I know that you're struggling with. Reach out. We can get you plugged in. We can get you the help that you need. And man, let's walk in the true purpose of who we are as Christians, and let's do this thing, man. Let's make a change for what people need, and I'm passionate about it, and want
Amen.
people to know. So,
That's awesome. All right, man. Well, you may or may not know how I end my podcast, and it's this way. I love telling stories. I'm a storyteller, and so I always love to hear other people's stories. So if you're at a dinner party and there's a lull in the conversation, this is not recovery related. It's just a story that you like to tell, whether it's funny, meaningful, sad, tearjerker, whatever it is. What's a go-to story or joke that you like? This is what people will want to hear. And this is one that like I could drop the mic and leave the dinner party and everybody be like, whoa, that dude just showed up.
Oh man.
Not
Oh
putting too much pressure on you there, am I?
Oh man, no pressure, no
And
pressure.
I'm in sales, so I can stand silence. The first one to talk is always the one who loses. So I'll just sit here and be quiet until you think of something.
Love it. Okay, I'm gonna go full embarrassing because all my stuff's out there anyway. So yeah, no, I actually, this is only embarrassing to me, but I'll reveal it. Flashback to like 9th grade. I'm going to church. My buddy comes and picks me up for Sunday school, and I was running late, man. It was like one of those knock on the doors, and it's like, oh, I'm not ready for church, you know? And so it's one of those mad scrambles of getting ready for church. So I throw on my clothes, pull up some pants from the ground, and I throw on a shirt, and I'm out the door, right? So we're sitting around we're sitting around this moment, in a small group, and we're all really in a emotional spot. And I look down, and in my pants is my underwear sitting out of my pants, hanging right out the one of my jean pants, right out the bottom,
Not the
just
ones
kind
you
of
were wearing,
poking
though. They
out.
weren't the ones you were wearing. They didn't just fall. I'm
They
just, I'm
were
playing.
no, they were the ones from last night. And
Oh
so I don't know how, like a stealth bomber, man. I got
my
up,
gosh.
I excused myself to the restroom,
Yeah.
and I grabbed those bad boys, put them in my pocket, and I saved the day. So, tip for you, make sure you check your pants before you put them on to make sure there's no old undies hanging out in there.
Now I gotta ask the obvious question that all listeners are gonna be emailing if we don't get it answered here is, were they tidy whities or were they boxers?
100% tidy whities. 100%. Back then, I'm a boxer guy now. They were 100% tidy whities.
Absolutely, ninth grade. Of course they were. Oh, I love it. Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. Brian, thank you so much, man. This has been a lot of fun and
Man.
very meaningful, man. I mean, when I say a lot of fun, I know the experience was a lot of fun with you, but just the fun side of the other side, right? Of being able to be on this side of our addiction, and just want to encourage you and thank you for jumping in the deep end and really just taking this and embracing it. Tell your wife we love her. We're grateful for her and the courage that she's taken. I say the same thing about my wife and the journey that she's been on with me. And it does it, it it it's important that she's involved, and so really really proud of that. And
Thanks, man.
super excited to see what you're going to be doing with Mark. And we'll put some info in the show notes and everything to make sure people know how to get a hold of you. But thanks so much, man. Really appreciate you being here.
Thanks, brother.
You bet. Thank you for listening to the Purity Podcast. To learn more about Brian and engage with him, please go to ninthinningproject.com. That's the number 9th project.com. On our next episode of the Purity Podcast, we will talk about the first 90 days, building a foundation that actually holds. Hey, if this episode encouraged you, please share it with a brother in recovery. To learn more about Castamonia, meet other men in recovery, or give us your thoughts about future topics, please email us at puritypodcast@castamonia.org. And remember, as you travel this journey of recovery, you are not walking alone.